The Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Hope you're having a nice frosty Tuesday morning so far. We'll be joined now by a guy who likes to get a little flagrant. We saw the near flagrant in the Raptors game last night. He wrote the book on the most flagrant team in NBA history. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Joined now by senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, Chris Herring. Chris, good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing well, man. So you have a book that's out today. Congratulations, first of all. Blood in the Garden, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. And through this book, you have become best friends with Spike Lee. So tell us what it's like to be famous and get the ultimate Spike Lee rub.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. It does feel like we've become best friends at least for the last few days. He's asked me to go to a couple games with him and sit courtside with him for the last two games, which has been interesting. And no, it's an honor. I mean, if you want anybody in that Knicks orbit to really appreciate the work you've done, it's Spike Lee. So I'm just honored that he enjoyed it. He read the book in two sittings in one day on a night where the Knicks were playing, and he was courtside. He finished the book on that same day. So that's an honor.
Unbelievable. That's so cool, man. So Blood in the Garden, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks is the book. Again, it's out everywhere today. And I know it's 90s focused, but you kind of tipped me off, and my copy hasn't arrived yet. Hopefully it's coming today. But you kind of tipped me off that even though technically the two Raptors-Knicks playoff series were on the early 00s, that there's some fun Raptors stuff in this book around the Knicks as well.
Well, of course. I mean, from a Knicks perspective, which, you know, I should make clear I'm not a fan, just, you know, someone that covered the team for a few years, and I think from 2012 to 2016, the Knicks lost one of their key players from that era, one of the people that's on the cover of the book, to the Raptors through a trade. Charles Oakley went north in, what was that, 1998? Before the lockout in that 99 season. So, you know, from that perspective, it was a trade that fundamentally changed the Knicks a little bit to make them more athletic with Marcus Camby. And got on the phone with Butch Carter, who for any media person there probably knows how talkative he is. And essentially, you normally don't do this in trades when you're trying to trade someone or when you're trying to consummate a trade, but he was essentially kind of telling the Knicks and telling Ernie Grunfeld, who was the general manager of the Knicks at the time, are you sure you want to trade for Marcus Camby? And so he was almost trying to talk Ernie Grunfeld out of trading for Marcus Camby, even though I don't wanted the trade to happen. And so he essentially was trying to give Ernie Grunfeld a hint and saying that, you know, Marcus Camby, of course he's athletic, but he's also not very mature. And you guys are the Knicks playing for titles and playing for, you know, the conference, everything. We're in a much different place than Toronto was, where they're kind of in their infancy and just needed some legitimate guys on the roster and some vets that could kind of show everybody else the way. So Butch Carter essentially said that. And Glenn Grunwald essentially was trying to get Butch off the phone because he's like, what are you doing? We're trying to trade Marcus. We're not trying to keep him. Why are you trying to talk him out of it? So, and Glenn, you know, Glenn obviously was able to hop back on the phone. The trade did happen. But as soon as the phone call ended, Butch Carter looked at Glenn and he said, I'm telling you right now, that Grunfeld's going to end up getting fired over this. I'm telling you right now, he's going to get fired over it. And he essentially did. The Knicks made the finals that season, but Ernie Grunfeld ended up getting fired before they got there because they struggled to make the playoffs with a very talented Latrell Sprewell was added to that roster, Marcus Camby. They already had Allen Houston. They already had Ewing and guys like that. But Ernie Grunfeld did get fired over it. So Butch Carter's advice was probably pretty sound, but it was a weird, weird anecdote. I felt like it was worth including, not to mention that Charles Oakley didn't want to come to Toronto. And so he kind of hid until the last moment. And the Raptors were able to track him down and drag him basically to the north, because they almost were not able to consummate the trade because of how long he was hiding out away from them, because he didn't want to leave the Knicks where he'd been for 10 years.
It feels like a long way away from, hey, Knicks fans being upset about a couple losses in the finals during a stretch of, you know, I think it was 15 straight playoff appearances. Current version of the Knicks, a little shakier. They got back to the playoffs last year, but they've been slumping of late. I guess they've won 6 of the last 10, but they've fallen out of a play-in spot in the Eastern Conference. I know that you still keep an eye on the Knicks in your gig as senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, and obviously palling around with Spike. How does this Knicks team take a step in the right direction? Because right now they profile as a bit of a, hey, there's a good supporting cast here, but there's no one to put that supporting cast around. And it's been a long 20 years or so of the Knicks chasing marquee free agents that just don't happen to come.
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, I think a lot of people predicted a regression to the mean this year. I remember last year they had, I think, 4 of the top 12 or 13 players in the league that had the biggest three-point percentage improvement. It was Randall, Barrett, Derrick Rose, Reggie Bullock, all, had big, big improvements, especially Randall, a guy that wasn't even really a 30% shooter for his career, shooting above 40%. Barrett was similar to that too, where he made it just a huge leap. You need those guys to play a little bit more like last year. At least Randall, you need to play a little bit more like last season, to shoot a little bit more like last season, which I'm not completely sure he can do. He could probably get closer to last year, but he's been pretty inconsistent. The effort has been pretty inconsistent. He was responsible for guarding Miles Bridges yesterday, who had 20 points in the first quarter. So it was not very effective from that standpoint. So Randall, is a big part of it. But, yes, you mentioned it. They've struck out with stars for years now. Randall does not strike me as a number one guy. I think he would look a lot different if you were able to get someone that, easily was the number one guy that would push him to a number two slot and just kind of make life easier for him. And the same with Barrett, where you're asking him to be a number one or a number two guy when Randall's playing poorly. If you are able to slide those guys down one spot and make them a number two and a number three, easier said than done to find the number one guy if it's Lillard at some point or somebody else. But I feel like that they would look so much different. And not to mention, Derrick Rose has been out for weeks at this point and was a guy that was a catalyst for those teams last year, that team last year when they traded for him, that their record, I think they won, somewhere between 60 and 65% of their games when Rose played. So he's really, really important to the team, especially when Kemba Walker has not been healthy, has not been consistent from one game to the next when he can play. They don't have that much point guard play. They ask Alec Burks to do that. And I guess, to sum it up, defensively, they are not the same. They were fourth in the league in defense last year. I think they're, slightly below average this year, maybe a little bit worse than that defensively. Nerlens Noel has missed time. It hasn't looked that great when he's played. Mitchell Robinson had put on so much muscle at the beginning of the year. He was a little bit slower. It's a team that just really isn't special defensively. And that was their calling card last year. And so you take all those things together, and, a team that was 41 and 31 last year now is, just kind of fighting to stay at or around 500.
Again, we're talking to Chris Herring. His new book is called Blood in the Garden, The Flagrant History of the 90s New York Knicks. It's out today. I love this because it's a classic fan base that hasn't had a lot of good times. And so it's like, yeah, you like to look back, right? 90s Knicks forever. And the Knicks, that's just their MO, right? They love to look back. They like to look back. They look back at Kemba Walker when he was a point guard in college or earlier in his career. And they go, hey, maybe this can work. He's a New York guy. Hey, now we're going to look back. Now we're going to look all the way back to Duke. We're going to go get Cam Reddish. We're going to reunite him with RJ Barrett. And I got to say, I know you've talked, if you sat next to Spike Lee multiple games, there is no way that you're going to tell me on this show that he didn't bring up the possibility of Zion and that you guys didn't talk about the risk assessment of going out and getting Zion. Like when we're talking about 1A guys and marquee guys and all these different things, do you think that this is maybe going to be the game plan for the next year, is that they become the Duke Blue Devils, like in the pros, the Duke Blue Devils grown up?
I promise you, we didn't talk about that. I mean, it's funny. I brought up the idea of getting a superstar, a star player, and he got really animated in a way that only Spike can. He was like, who are we going to get? Who are we going to get? Who's coming here?
Yeah. Damn, Zion. You go get Zion.
That voice. I mean, that's easier said than done, too. I guarantee you that New Orleans is not looking to give up on him yet. You know, New Orleans is not a place where – well, actually, maybe it is. I was going to say it's not a place that superstars grow on trees. I guess they did have Anthony Davis a few years ago. But, you know, I think if they can get him right and if they can feel like, you know, Zion trusts them enough, which I think there are questions about that, given that he's rehabbing away from them and given that, he hasn't been able to heal just this year to be able to play at all. So, you know, maybe there is a trust factor that is kind of diminishing there, and maybe New Orleans is skeptical that they can make things work. But, I don't think that that's someone that they could trade for right now. And even if it was, they need their young guys to play better to make that worthwhile. I mean, RJ Barrett is a nice young player. He's also very inconsistent. I think he's scored 30-plus in probably five or four of the last seven games or something, which is obviously unusually good for a young player, but he goes through real stretches where he just, you know, shoots 20%, and then he'll go five games in which he shoots 60% and is hitting half of his threes. You know, has games where he'll miss half of his free throws. So, you just kind of have to see. He's the one prospect that they've got that you would feel pretty good about. They've got Quickly, and so they've got some youth, but they also just traded Kevin Knox, who was not someone that performed really at all during his time in New York. Reddish is interesting, but Reddish is about to probably get some money. And so, you know, depending on how he performs the rest of this year, I think that's why Atlanta let him go, realizing that they weren't going to be able to afford to keep him. So it's an interesting roster, but, man, it would be an interesting storyline to get somebody like Zion to try to. But, man, you're risking a whole lot at that point. And at that point, that's not someone that plays next to Randall, because they essentially, you know, at that point, you're probably playing Zion at the four. Randall kind of plays some of that himself as a 3-4 sort of player. So you're getting rid of him and sending him somewhere, and you're trying to build the whole thing around Zion, which that just feels like a big risk right now. I know how intriguing that is, but I don't know. And also a place that would be somewhat unforgiving if injury-wise he can't make it work. Especially if it's perceived that, you know, the weight and everything. I don't know. I see it as a function of, like, maybe he can't lose weight because he can't get healthy enough to actually work out the way he needs to. But if people perceive it to be an effort thing with regards to his weight and being able to stay healthy, then it seems like kind of a rough crowd to have that problem in front of.
So if we move on to the Raptors, because obviously we got to get your take on them. You had them ranked 12th in your most recent power rankings. They've gone the opposite direction of the Knicks, flipping with them in the standings. What impressions and what are your takes on why the Raptors are moving up in the power rankings lately?
I mean, Fred VanVleet has been masterful, really. One of the best guards in the league. Just incredible, really. And the way I've kind of always thought of the Raptors, quite frankly, I use the analogy sometimes shark's teeth, where you lose something or, you know, something goes away, and then all of a sudden something grows back and maybe even grows back stronger than it was before. A team that just, you know, every single year loses a ton of guys, whether it's health, whether it's free agency, which has been a couple times the last few years between Kawhi and Kyle Lowry. And they're just a team that is willing to gamble. Obviously, it's Masai Ujiri and a team that's going to throw lineups out there where every single player and maybe even all the coaches are 6'8". I'm not sure. But just a team that does a little bit of everything that kind of marches to the beat of its own drum based on what Nick Nurse wants to do and how much he wants to kind of gamble defensively with zone and different looks. And they've put it all together, really. And it's a team that I thought was a really easy bet to be better than they were last year. I thought just, you know, a team that is going to be back in their own country for starters, a team that wasn't, you know, hopefully wasn't going to get ravaged by COVID and everything else the way it did before. So I've just been really impressed. And, you know, Siakam was kind of skewered last year for how he played and how he performed. Obviously, he was not all the way healthy and has looked solid. But a team that just, you know, has all the pieces there and has a lot of championship experience on that roster. It was a pretty safe bet that they were going to be better. It was just a question of kind of where are they going to finish. And you had some people saying that they're going to finish 12th and 13th and, you know, without Lowry and, you know, Siakam was not very good last year. They were never going to finish that low. To me, at worst, they were going to be right around the play-in range. And so the idea that they've been hot lately does not surprise me in the slightest, because that's a team that, like I said, there's championship caliber experience there. And you can't overlook that, especially with guys that keep getting better. And that's kind of the hallmark of the Masai Ujiri teams, is that his teams always get better, even when young guys kind of have to step up. And that's always been the case, seemingly.
So word on the street is you haven't been the biggest fan of Russ this season. And you know why that is because anybody with eyes who's not related to him is not a fan of Russ this season. Like, I don't know how anyone could possibly justify, like, even yesterday I was laughing because he gets that N1, and Blake and I were talking about it before the show today, and it's like, you know, they put all these clips out and how LeBron's punched him in the chest and all his teammates are coming around. I'm like, this guy lives in, I want to live Russell Westbrook's life just for 1 week in terms of how people around me treat me, where they're just constantly gassing me up. I get to make as many mistakes as I get to make, and I just, like, there's no consequences with the minutes wise, like employment wise, all these things just remain the same. But it's a disaster. It's really, really bad. It's so bad, and it's to the point where I don't care if they get Anthony Davis back. There's no working model here. The entire play for Westbrook, I thought anyways, was make the regular season easier on LeBron, and now we're seeing LeBron, like, night in, night out, need to give them 30 points just to even get close. How do you think this thing plays out? Because I got to imagine that LeBron, he's like three more Russell Westbrook days away from doing one of those. Remember we did the tweet about Kevin Love where he was like, some of these guys got to fit in or fit out. The fit in, fit out. Like, I feel like he's going to borderline on that. He already did the apology. They won that game, but it's like, what's the next lever for LeBron? It's going to be GM LeBron, you know, breaking out the suitcase and trying to make a move, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be really, really, really honest here. And, you know, I don't purport to be a newsbreaker. I'm not trying to suggest that I know anything. But I think if we have to guess here, I just don't think – I mean, not to mention that the Lakers played the Rockets recently in the playoffs. So, I mean, we've seen them defend Russell Westbrook, and we've seen them leave Russell Westbrook wide open from three. Every team knows what the preferred strategy is to defend him, and it's basically just to make him prove that he can shoot, which we know that he can't do very well. So I based on that, and based on the fact that the Lakers front office certainly knows that, the only real takeaway I've got is that, okay, LeBron has say and has cachet with that front office. And I imagine that he made it known that he wanted Russell Westbrook. That's kind of what it comes down to. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say, I don't think players make for the greatest GMs. I think they overlook a lot of things about fit. The only one I think that shines through every time he makes a decision with regards to a team and where he's going to go, even to the point where I'm like, why is he going there? And then it works out beautifully, is Chris Paul. Mm. Chris Paul, everywhere he goes, he seems to be just a perfect fit. And I think it speaks to the juxtaposition between Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook in terms of that situation. Even in Oklahoma City, Chris Paul seemed to be a great fit and, you know, make his teammates better. Certainly when he decided that he wanted to go to Phoenix, that was a team that had not even made the playoffs yet. And then he gets there and they are making the finals. And then, you know, this year, best record in the league. So Chris Paul is very good at, you know, I don't think he's making decisions as far as the team goes. But if he was, you know, and it seems like he's pulling all the right levers, I don't know that LeBron does that. you know, he's played in Cleveland, too, where it looked like it was very clear he was able to make some of those sorts of calls. And he would talk about the idea that he had his eyes on people. Look, maybe he's right with certain people. You know, he kept saying that Malik Monk was someone that he had his eye on. That he was surprised that more teams didn't want him, surprised that teams weren't going to pay him more. So the Lakers have done well with certain guys this year. Austin Reeves, you know, Malik Monk has put it together really nicely since kind of joining the starting lineup. But you had to give up a lot of your depth. And, you know, we've also watched someone like Caruso when he was healthy with Chicago be a total game changer for them. Washington got out to a really nice start. We saw KCP, Montrezl Harrell had a really nice year for them. So you had to give up just a lot of things to be able to get Russell Westbrook. And they basically made a decision to give up their depth to add another star. And here was my problem with it all along, that trade. Russell Westbrook is a third star. Third stars, we think about Klay Thompson. You think about, I'm trying to think who else. You think about Chris Bosh from back in the day. Those are guys that shoot really well for their position. And by having them, you make other teams pay if they leave those guys wide open because they don't have enough resources. They've got a double team. They can't get out to them quickly enough. Russell Westbrook, it's not a question of people closing out on him hard and having to respect him as a shooter. They would be leaving him open anyway. So there's no real added benefit there. And if he's making life easier for LeBron by handling the ball, guess what? That's kind of a bad thing because LeBron is so efficient that you really don't want Russ to take too many possessions like that, especially with how kind of singular, you know, single focused he can be sometimes when he decides he's going to go to the basket and not look to anybody else. So it never was going to work. And, you know, I immediately kind of took them out of the favorites list on a personal level, but I didn't imagine that it would be this bad. I figured they'd be a little bit better than this.
Well, we all know where this ends. The untradeable contract that has already seen Russ be on four teams in 4 years, because every contract's tradable. $47 million starting point guard for the Knicks next year, and giving you the material for the sequel to Blood in the Garden, the flavor history of the 1990s New York Knicks.
Don't put that in my lap.
Chris Herring, Sports Illustrated, Blood in the Garden, out everywhere today. Thanks so much for making the time this morning, man.
Thank you guys for having me. You guys take care. Thank you.
And that insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. JD, I am only half joking about the Russ to Knicks eventuality. This is something you felt strongly about. How do you see this playing out? Because I can't imagine Westbrook's turning down a $47 million player option for next year, and the Lakers have no real path to dealing, like sweetening the pot in a trade of him or... No. You know, really adding around this core.
I don't think that there's anything that can be done. I keep seeing GM LeBron, Le GM or whatever, and like he's going to try to make the trades and blah, 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 blah. I don't think there's nothing they can do. Who's taking that contract? What sweetener would you have to add to it? Like, what are you going to trade him for, John Wall? what's the contract out there? That makes sense. And can I be dead honest with you? I would trade him for John Wall. And I don't even need to watch John Wall play. I would just rather have John Wall than Russell Westbrook. I would rather have an injured guy than Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook sucks. He's terrible. He hurts that team every single night. And it's not just the stats. It's his defense. Man, I watch a lot of Lakers games because they're on late and they're just the best team to either bet against or bet on against crappy teams. It's not – Russell Westbrook has got to be one of the most brain-dead defenders in the NBA in clutch spots. Like, the amount of freelancing that he does defensively where he just sewers his team is genuinely hilarious. It's like, just do one thing that's positive, Russ. One thing. Can't do it. Can't play disciplined. He's loose. In terms of just his mentality in a game, he takes horrific shots. He takes the ball away from LeBron, and he needs to play a ton of minutes, or else I guess he's going to pout and have some type of a breakdown with the team. Like, there are nights where he so obviously doesn't have it, and they still have to play him into the ground, and he breaks them. He truly breaks them. I can't remember a time where one dude just absolutely sabotaged a team the way that Russell Westbrook is sabotaging this Lakers team. Honest to God. Can you, like, what's the example? LeBron James is putting up historic LeBron James numbers. 30 a night. And they can't get wins against just about anybody. They need to fluke out to get wins against the Sacramento Kings. They got to go down to the wire against them because of the way that Russell Westbrook is playing. Like, it's awful. It's truly, truly awful. And so, let me ask you guys this. Do you think there's anybody on earth that is quite like they are in their field, like LeBron James, in the sense of that guy is a basketball genius. He is the greatest basketball player that I've seen his entire career of, because I didn't see all of MJ's career, right? I was a kid. I watched a lot of MJ. That's my, you know, formational years. Some people think he's the greatest, whatever. LeBron's the greatest player I've seen in my lifetime. He is also someone that usually gets the best out of players or can get the better out of players. How can you be so good at basketball, such a smart basketball mind, and be such a horrific GM? Like, the flaw in the argument Chris makes about Malik Monk is that LeBron gasses up every player. So, yeah, like, that's what he does with literally everybody. He always says that, oh, that's his LeBron James playbook. Is this guy was disrespected and we can't believe people didn't want him, blah, 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 blah. That's LeBron on every player he's ever played with. I don't even understand how it's possible to this degree, where everyone in the NBA knows that Russ is washed and that it's a horrible contract and that you can't win with him. And LeBron goes, yeah, I'm going to pass on Buddy Hield, who can knock down an open three-point shot. I'm going to take Russell Westbrook, completely untradeable, undefensible player. Just what other example do we have like this?
It's not even just the Russ thing either. It's you look at the supporting cast around him. That here are the ages of the top Lakers guys in minutes. 33, 37, 37, 23. Yeah. That's Malik Monk. 28, 31. 21 is Talen Horton-Tucker. 34, 36. 32, 33, 35. 36.
Unbelievable. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't.
That's how I
don't
feel being on the morning show with you guys.
Okay.
There's Stanley Johnson.
I'm Malik Monk.
No, you're Stan the man. That's who you are.
You're Chaundy Brown Jr., 23-year-old playing spot minutes there.
I really would have to think about it. And granted, you don't get this many examples because there are not LeBrons out there who get the equity and the power within their organizations to make these moves. So maybe other athletes would be worse at it. But man, it just reminds me of Aaron Rodgers this past offseason, where he's crying at the podium going, and they didn't re-sign Jordy Nelson. And you go, but he was done. His career was over. His career was done, Aaron. All the guys that you listed, their careers were done. Nobody came back to haunt you. And how athletes have this disconnect of who is still good versus, you know, even the great ones. But it's just, it's very, very odd to me that Chris references the Lakers having played Russell Westbrook in the playoffs, and yet still, like, a guy like LeBron would go, no, it's going to be different with us. It's going to work with us.
I was trying to think of a NHL-related comparison.
Nobody in hockey ever
truly
gets
none.
That power.
No.
You know?
They just exist. Like, they don't make decisions. They just show up and play. But no, I can't think of somebody in any sport that has that type of legacy right now. It's tough. You don't want
it. Could you imagine the Penguins went to Sid, Brian Burke and Ron Hextall go to Sid. They're like, Sid, make the choices. He's like, no, thank you. I'd like to just play hockey, thanks. You guys do that. You guys do your job, I'll do mine. Yeah. So Le GM, congrats. It's such a weird one because it actually is. It's part of his legacy, right? Like, this actually will go down as part of LeBron's legacy at the end of his career. When we're doing the greatest of all time talking and the rings and the things, it's like, yeah, he pissed away the end of his career chasing Russell Westbrook like some kind of weird fanboy who thinks triple doubles are a thing. Like, I don't get it. I just do not get it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I'm glad you said that last part is it's not even about whether you like the moves or not, or you think he's a, you know, a good evaluator of personnel. It's that this has cost him materially in terms of the type of things that we talk about with legacies. And, like, obviously LeBron is, like, unassailable as, like, a top three guy. But if you're talking, hey, if he really wants to be the number one in a lot of conversations over MJ, he's maybe cost himself a ring at some point making these kind of moves. Anyway, what we didn't cost you. Well, no, we did cost you money. That was a bad segue.
Someone
old trapdoor over here. It was JD last night was the trapdoor.
We're getting into last night's
Wake
and
Rake. We're going to tee up tonight's Wake and Rake with a really bad slate of sports ahead tonight. And keep the text coming. 590-590. We're doing some text line later in the show. In the Wake and Rake segment, you got betting questions, some of the stuff we talk about you don't understand or you're just curious about to learn more. Keep those coming. 590-590. I will do all that next. That's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Money, money, money. The talk of the hour. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Fan Morning Show, the Wake and Rake segment. All of y'all tuning in to get some money. We didn't give it to you last night, but we have redemption coming, right, guys?
I will always stand by this. Like, the show goes 2 of 3. The show is winning to me. I view them as separate things, whereas you can play the Wake and Rake parlay and you can go for all three, or you can just say that you end up getting 3 best bets every day and they more often than not hit. Mine missed yesterday. I don't know how the hell that happened. The Bucks were up 10 points against the Atlanta Hawks, and I stopped paying attention. I guess I maybe cursed myself with my mentality, but I did not watch. I saw the score. It's the fourth quarter. It's the defending champs against a Hawks team that has been one of the worst in basketball this year. I went and I was like, you're not going to close this gap because you can't get stops for 10 points. And then the Bucks lost by 10 points. I don't know. It is one of the most, like, you know, a few moments later, the SpongeBob meet. That was me, where I was like, what the hell happened? I couldn't believe I cost it for us.
Yeah, so it was Bucks -5 was where the line is heading into the game. And with a little under 7 minutes to go, they were at a 78% probability, not to win, to cover. Yeah, and then it swings the other way with a 7-point loss. That was a truly embarrassing closeout to that game.
Does anybody know if it was a bones day or a no bones day?
Is this your little TikTok thing?
The girls that get it, and the girls that don't, don't.
Yeah. I don't know what that has to do with what we're talking about.
I'm a girl that doesn't get it. I don't get it. I'm lost. I'm too old for this.
No,
I'm too old.
She's doing this thing where she's trying. People are commenting on TikTok, and she's trying to sneak in stuff without us knowing. But she has the worst poker face. She started laughing as she was saying it, so it was a dead giveaway that was the TikTok word of the day.
Well, way to ruin it.
Wait, you're making a TikTok right now? That's the oldest thing I've ever said. Where I was like, are you making a TikTok right now? That's me. That's me becoming officially old.
Ailish, here's the thing you got to know about your simps. Some of them are snitches, too.
Clearly.
I don't have TikTok, but I knew what was going on. And then, you got to work on the poker face.
All I know is a couple things. I missed last night. I still had the Siakam over on assists. But my God, did I ever miss on that football game too, though? Thank God for the Raptors props coming through for me, because that football game did not go the way that I thought it was going to go. I actually did like the Rams to win. I'm kind of kicking myself that I talked myself out of it, because it was a stay away, and I'm okay with that element of it. But I really did think that the Cards were bad and that at least the Rams are competent. It's just that the Rams had burned me a couple times this year where I really thought that they were going to come through. They didn't end up doing it, but either way, that was a bad one. But yeah, no Zach Ertz touchdown, no Kyler touchdown. I think, Ailish, you ended up playing the Cooper Kupp TD, right?
Yeah, I played it, but in a parlay that lost everything else.
Yes. But that was a rough one.
It was the parlay that we talked about. It was Cooper Kupp, but then Zach Ertz over and Kyler Murray over, and it wasn't even freaking close.
Everyone was under.
The Kupp TD was about the only thing that saved me. I didn't have a great NFL night either.
No one would, though, because everybody bets overs on one-off nights, and you're always looking for the overs in one-off nights. It's not very fun. I took the under in two things, Tyler Higbee yards, which went under by, I think, 3 yards, and it was only under because of the game script, so I'm not even accepting a hit on that, and under on Sony Michel yards, which, again, same thing, where you went, okay, why are we even playing those? For the most part, you like to play overs in those. So let's just move into tonight, because it's pretty light. It's a hockey night, but it's an out-of-market hockey night. There's nothing local. Unless there's lacrosse or something that I'm not aware of, but I don't think that's the case. This is one of the worst days of the year. You have the come down. Well, just think about how packed it's been, right? How just the slate has been incredible since Friday. It was just loaded, loaded, loaded. You had Saturday where it felt like you just couldn't have enough screens, and then Sunday is just amazing, and then Super Wild Card extends into Monday. This reminds me of March Madness, that first night of no March Madness, where you're kind of looking around going, What am I going to pick? What am I going to do? I'm just going with this because this slate sucks. But I am going to bet this, and I do like this. I'm just taking the Dallas Stars. I'm taking the Dallas Stars, and I'm taking the Dallas Stars on the puck line -1.5. It's the Montreal Canadiens on a back-to-back. That's all I really need to say here. This is not based on anything Dallas Stars related, but I'm going to settle in. I'm hopefully going to see some John Klingberg minutes. I'm going to see if I think he's the Toronto Maple Leafs solution to the right side of their blue line and think about how he pumps the Montreal Canadiens. If he gets a goal, who knows? But that is going to be my night. I'm going to be taking this is just a purely fade Montreal. Like, we have a text, right, Ayler? Somebody asked, because I got that DM too, about what's more embarrassing, one win in 50 games or 50
one
days?
One win in 60 days for the Habs or two wins in 47 days for the Oilers.
Yeah, and it's obviously the Oilers because they're the much better hockey team. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is a weird thing with all the COVID stoppages. But, yeah, I just think if you can keep betting against the team that has one win in 50 days, you do that. Like, that's just the thing you do. So let's go Stars, win by two.
I like that. I guess I'm going to have to go NHL tonight, too. Not much happening on the NBA side. There's a couple things that intrigue me, like the Hurricanes being plus money underdogs. It hasn't happened in a while, and they are a really good team. I know they're playing Boston, which is a hot team, but if you can get money on the Hurricanes as underdogs, is plus 115 where I have it. I think that that's a good by itself piece if you're interested. I wouldn't put that in my wake and rake, but that stood out to me. Same with Sabres being plus money underdogs as well against Senators.
Plus 140.
Kind of, yeah. Well, I have it one plus 150.
Does Aaron Dell starting shift that for you at all?
892 save percentage, other goalie
3.8 goals against.
I don't know. I just don't believe in the Sens much. Just another thing intriguing-wise. Plus
yeah,
money,
I just want to
underdogs.
Throw it out there because it's one of the rare times that we actually know the goalie at at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to bet it. Just throwing it out there, but I am going to go Panthers against the Flames. So Panthers are red hot. We have this one guy that texts in every day being like, talk about the Panthers. I love the Panthers. And this guy is just obsessed with the Panthers. But I am going to put some money on that. Last time they played, they spanked the Flames. And that was the game that afterwards, all the Flames players were like, that's a different level of a hockey team. Like, we got embarrassed. And I feel like it's going to happen again. The Panthers are red hot. It is a road game for them, though, so that's one thing to consider. But I think I'm going to go money line for them, -140. But the puck line, if you want a little extra juice, is +170. I don't think it'll be that much of a blowout. But it was. It was 6-2 last time, so. Debate.
Debate. Just debate. Was that a request or was that a demand?
I actually really like debate as a just a normal
just
way
go.
Of setting things up. I think that you should be incorporating that into the A-list from now on. I will say that just in general, like, today is just a principal day for me, right? Like, this is a principal day. I don't know a ton about a lot of these things, and if some of them I'm betting, I'm doing some cursory research. Mm-hmm. But for me, this is a... If you're going to bet, you're probably going to bet some tennis. So look up which favorites actually have a good track record at the Australian Open. Look up players who are actually playing well right now. Look up players who might be dealing with just a little bit of a nagging something because of the conditioning at these kind of things. Principal stuff, right? Same with hockey betting. Aaron Dell sucks. He's awful. Like, I can't believe he's actually still in the NHL. But... It's the Ottawa Senators, and it's a principal bet where just $5, you know, just $5,
baby.
+150, +140, something like that on a game against the Ottawa Senators. I can do that. It's still hockey. Like, I don't view those two teams as worlds apart. So yeah, that's just $5 for me.
Yeah, there you go. You know, the Senators have won 6 of their last 10. Maybe they're trending in the right direction, but they're still two very bad teams. And what did we learn yesterday in that Coyotes game? You could take the slightly worse bad team and do okay.
So, Ailish, which of those picks are you actually locking in for Wake and Rake today?
Panthers on the money line.
Okay, so Panthers on the money line. So, Blake, we're shifting over to you. Can I guess what your pick is going to be?
Sure.
Are you back on our Pistons? That's a lot of points. Plus 14 and a half. No? Okay, damn.
No, I'm not going...
I kind of want...
Go ahead.
No, I just... You and I have picked the Pistons in a couple of spots this year where we've thought that there was too many points. And I don't know what... I'm guessing Steph Curry is back, if that's the line. Like, there's no way that he's not, and it's 14 and a half. But either way, like, a bit of a rusty Steph, and the Warriors haven't looked great lately. Still no Draymond. 14 and a half just seems like... That's a lot. That's a college basketball line, you know? Like, that's a hefty spread.
Yeah, I probably will touch that a little later. I don't feel strongly enough for it to be my wake and rake. Again, Golden State, they are getting Steph back, Clay's back, but they have no Draymond. Gary Payton II and Moses Moody are both questionable. That's a big, big line. But it's also the Golden State Warriors and the Detroit Pistons. So as much as 15 points is nice, kind of back to what you guys were saying about the NHL, is like, how much are you going to kick yourself if you – not if you bet on the Pistons, but if you stake something big on it and the Pistons get routed by the Warriors, you're going to be like, oh, of course the Pistons got routed by the Warriors on the road. So that'll probably be a small one for me later. It's the same kind of thing, the Timberwolves at the Knicks. I don't want to pick on the Knicks too often, but second day of a back-to-back, they haven't looked good at all. The Timberwolves are pretty healthy, but I don't feel strongly about either of those for a wake and rake play. I'm actually going to college basketball for my wake and rake play with such a light NBA night, and with Ailish having taken my primary hockey bet of the night. Wisconsin at Northwestern, I locked that in at Wisconsin -1 earlier. The line's already moved to -2.5, to where I'd probably just play money line. So since we're saying this now, I'm going to say Wisconsin money line for the wake and rake piece. I don't want to go to 2.5 when I got it at 1, and kind of, if it's close, be sitting there trying to play both sides. So I'll just go Wisconsin money line at Northwestern. Northwestern's actually pretty good, but analytically, this projects as about a 5-point difference on neutral court. Wisconsin's rolling against the spread. Northwestern's been struggling against it. And Northwestern's best player is questionable, which I think probably explains the 1.5-point morning swing there. So college basketball, not my most comfortable for wake and rake, but I'll go Wisconsin outright there.
But you do love Wisconsin.
Do I?
Yeah. I feel like you've picked Wisconsin before. Am I wrong?
No, I had them as a side, as like an extra sprinkle one day last week.
Oh, okay.
Because I know that Danielle, our producer, is a big Johnny Davis fan. But I haven't actually locked them in for our wake and rake at all.
I feel like you're a big Johnny Davis fan now as well, though, is what I'm trying to get at here. He's
Raptors-y.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I watch these games and I'm like, oh, who would the Raptors like? And it's like, yeah, the guy who off-ball guards maniacally because he's that's just how he operates. So I like Johnny Davis, but I also just think that Wisconsin's a pretty good team here, and they've got some I don't know, I just like this one. It's a very, very light NBA night. So what was the game? Oh yeah, Ohio State. I had them last Thursday as a hey, you could also play this. But I didn't lock them in as my wake and rake.
I am on a hiatus from college basketball gambling right now, as I have had some horrific beats this year in college basketball. And so right now I'm just feeling a little cursed, and so I'm going to stay away. I'm going to stay away as a favor to you as well, where I am not – I promise you I am not going to touch this Wisconsin game. You just laid out a strong case. I loved it. I like that analytical edge. I like knowing that the other team's star player is banged up. I'm dying about it. I'm just making a promise to the audience right now that I have been just toxic for college basketball this year. Like, it is, I've never had a year like this with college ball where it's everything I touch is poo. So I'm not touching it. I'm staying away from it. I will not put the kiss of death on it. I will say this though, I do like Minnesota tonight. Minnesota is plucky, and this is one of those, I don't think you have an answer for Karl Anthony Towns game. The Knicks stink. Let's just be honest. The Knicks really stink. And you saw that last night when we locked in the Charlotte Hornets. That was Blake's pick. And that was just a no doubter from the hop, right?
Like, I love having one leg of the wake and rake done by like 3 p.m.
Yeah, that was
give
really
us afternoon
quite
games every day, please.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well because I bet the Hornets, because they were plus money, I just took them straight up. I didn't include them in a parlay. All my parlay NBA bets yesterday went to crap, and I doubled down on the Sixers, which made it even worse. But, I don't trust this Knicks team, and I think that this is one of those a little bit name-brand games where you look at this on paper and you go, oh, the Knicks were good last year, and Minnesota sucks, and they always suck, and they're on the road, blah, 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 blah. Nah. Minnesota's the better basketball team right now. I really do. They got the best player out of the two. I just think that they're better. They're better than the Knicks are right now. So I'm just going to take a better team on a short line. I could see Minnesota also having another game where there's no sweat here.
Yeah, I mean the Knicks are shaky right now. They're not in a good place. They're sliding again back to back, and it's at home, so maybe it's not that big a deal, but you still don't. I don't know. I don't love. Like I said, I'll probably touch Timberwolves later. I just, you know, on a best bets, want to go the Wisconsin route. But yeah, I don't. I'm so out on the Knicks at this point. If that wasn't clear from our Chris Herring interview earlier,
but like I also don't mind the total in this game. Like I'd be curious to see. I didn't pull it up, but I'm just saying this is something for me to flag. But Minnesota is not exactly all world defense. And I don't think that the Knicks right now on a back-to-back are going to play tough. You could end up like talking the case about like tired legs and missing shots if you're doing these things. But it's like, I just 214 doesn't seem all that high. This feels like on just surface, I'd be looking at something closer to 220. And I wonder if the back-to-back or the Knicks not scoring is playing a piece into this. But nah, that seems a little low to me, actually. And I'll probably play the over in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that tracks for me. I'll look at it a little closer. I haven't – it's not one that I have in front of me. But, yeah, 214, I mean, look, that's a fairly low total for non-elite defenses. That's a reasonable play in my eyes. So we got Wisconsin money line at Northwestern. We got the Florida Panthers money line. We got the Stars puck line. That's minus 1.5. That's your Waking Rink for January 18th. Let's stay hot, guys.
Let's get it. We need it.
Still winning percentages. 2 out of 3. I know. 2 out of 3. By the way, I just want to say quickly before we go, and maybe I'll elaborate on this more when we have our next Raptors game, which is when? Tomorrow? Do they play tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ugh, double Leafs and Raps, eh? Okay,
I know. Can they spread this stuff
spread
out?
Yeah, no. Just spread it out. Let's play a back-to-back Raptors.
There's no sports tonight. Play one tonight. Yeah, exactly. Leafs.
I think I'm going to tease this, actually. I'm going to tease this for tomorrow. I have a Raptors parlay that I'm going to be playing every single Raptors game for the rest of the year. So
well,
that.
I sent you my yeah. same game parlay that hit last night, right?
Yep. And yeah. Mine hit yesterday that I'm making a tweak to it. I ended up hitting on the Siakam rebounds, but I'll never do that again. That sweat was just I'm done. I'm Pascal Rodman. I wish I never heard that clip because it's been in my head, and I lost one bet builder because of that, and I barely squeaked by yesterday because of it. But yes, tune into the Wake and Rake tomorrow. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. We really appreciate it. Really does help us out. So if you care about this podcast, if you like this radio show, just do it anyways. Even if you do listen on the radio, it does help us.